Wait, wait, stop, that's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. So today we have a guest. Our guest today is Kelly Carlson. Kelly is a former Jehovah's Witness, and Kelly's story is a very juicy and interesting one as I pre-read it. So welcome to the show, Kelly. Thank you for your courageous story that you're going to tell us.
All righty.
Awesome. So tell us who you are and what brings you joy.
My name is Kelly Carlson, not Kelly Clarkson, as other people say. What brings me joy is knowing that I am free from a cult. It's still hard, but it is awesome to know that I no longer have that life in me.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
It comes with its issues because, you know, for me, I've left my mom, who I was super close to. I left my sister. I left two brothers and tons of family. It was hard to walk away, but I have other family. I have friends and I have family that are not Jehovah's Witnesses that I've actually been able to reconnect because I wasn't allowed to connect with them because they weren't Jehovah's Witnesses, and they are very dear and they're very close to me. And family is not all about blood is what I'm finding out. And, so that's my joy. Is it's a burden that has been lifted off my shoulders, but it does come with other stuff too. But as we all know.
And so, how long were you Jehovah's Witness for, and when did you leave?
So my mom became a Jehovah's Witness in 1973. I was five, and they came to her door, and within 6 months she was baptized, and that's where, you know, my other siblings, we were just like, this is where our life. And my dad was not a Jehovah's Witness, and he was like, okay, that's fine. He's not a religious person, and he was like, okay. And so that from 1973 to, oh gosh, 2010. Hold on, I gotta think about it. 47. So 10 years ago, I left.
Oh, wow.
So that would be, so 2010, 2011. I left a marriage of 24 years. And just, I walked away. I saw the hypocrisy. Had been cheated on by a Jehovah's Witness, my first husband. And, you know, I was told, you know, my mom told me, oh, he left you because you were fat. And I'm like, okay. And then when he wanted to get back with me, because we had two kids, he cheated on me when I had a 6-month-old baby. And the elders were like, he's willing to forgive you. I mean, I didn't cheat, he did. And he's like, they were like, can you just find it in your heart to forgive him? And I did. And then 10 years later, he was an asshole. to my oldest son and cheated again. And I'm like, I'm done. And I walk away. And I told him, I said, well, I told him, I said, you know, I'm done with this religion. I'm done with this cult. And they're like, we're not a cult, of course. And I'm like, well, you know, you forced me in back into a relationship that I did not want to have with somebody who cheated on me. And that who was happy to kick our oldest son out. I didn't want to kick my oldest son out. But my oldest son was like, I'm done with this, Mom. This is ridiculous. He was 16. Oh, my. Yeah. And they were like, well, you need to drag him to the meetings. And I'm like, I can't. Can you drag a 16-year-old to a meeting? And my husband was, at the time, was counting down the days until he was 18 to kick him out. And being a good Joe's Witness wife, I kicked my son out when he turned 18. He became homeless. And by the grace of God, somebody in his high school parents took him in. And he lived on a couch in a garage. And after that, when I saw that people were happy that I kicked my son out, I was like, nope, I'm done. And I left my husband and we got a divorce and I had my son move back in with me. And he's still out. The youngest is still in, but kind of in, you know.
With and his mother?
No, he lives on his own. He lived with his dad for a little while. And then he went and moved to Portland and stuff. And his dad is in like St. Louis. But the thing is like my first husband paid no attention to his first son. He was more than happy to kick him out. And he really doesn't have a good relationship with him anymore, even though, you know, he lived at the time just an hour away from him. And it was like once he left, it was like he shunned him. He was never baptized. So, you know, but so, yeah. And so I left and I did my thing and kind of went a little crazy. Like when you leave. So I was a Jehovah's Witness from 5 to 47 and got married, virgin. First husband, virgin, and you're just like, you don't do anything, you just have sex, you're just boring, you just have kids, go to meetings, go to conventions, yada, yada, yada. When I left, I kind of went a little bit crazy. And I think that's a pretty common thread with a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses. Like, well, going to nightclubs and, like, dancing. What?
Yeah. And how did you find your way? Because were you ever not worldly, but part of the doing things that are part of the world in order to get your footing once you were out? Because how did you find your way since that's all you knew at 47?
I was the good girl, like high school good girl. Never skipped school. Never did anything wrong. Married, never drank, never did nothing, you know, until like probably a couple years, like after I had my youngest son, and I talked about meeting my friend that I became a dog groomer. And the lady that owned the dog groom business, me and my husband and the two boys lived above her garage, but her daughter lived down the street. And we kind of hated each other at first because I think she was kind of jealous of, I don't know what the deal was. But one day I came over and she was pregnant and I was pregnant at the same time with her second, my first. And we got to talking and we realized that we both thought her mom was kind of a bitch. Her dad was a PO and she was like, wanted to read like all sorts of books and had fantasies and that nobody could talk to. And I'm like, I feel the same way. And so we became a thing, not, you know, it was like, I always kind of knew I was might have been bi. I didn't realize that she was bi, of course, at all. And then we didn't have like a major sexual relationship, but we had a deep friendship relationship. And so that was kind of at my beginning of when I'm like, this doesn't seem right. And we got kind of trouble a little bit because we were kissing and stuff. And, you know, of course, that's not approved. And then she moved and I moved into her house. We bought her house and she moved to Arizona where they're very liberal. And she left the religion completely after having her dad being a PO and upstanding family in the congregation. And I went to visit her and she's like, you know, you have to be true to yourself. And that was kind of the seed of my beginnings. It was like, and they were living a polyamorous lifestyle, and which I kind of, at the time, I didn't understand it, but she put a huge, huge seed in my brain and was like thinking, okay, my sexuality is obviously going to be totally under wraps for a long, long time. And it was hard to find my way at first because I didn't understand it. I left and I found myself a divorced woman with a grown child that's out, a teenager that was being shared back and forth. And I lived in an apartment that the lifestyle was a bunch of single people divorced and stuff. And I kind of found my way through them, like, you know, it's okay to be you. It's okay to be sexual. It's okay to be whatever you want to be. And that was such a new reality for me. And yeah, it was hard. It came with a lot of anxiety. And then I met my husband, who I'm married to now, through not through a dating site, but my friend had a dating site and she was like, hey, this guy looks like somebody you'd be interested in. And that's who I started dating. And I went when you leave such a restrictive cult or lifestyle, you just kind of explode. And man, did it explode. I mean, it was a little, looking back, I'm like, okay, that was even crazy for worldly people. I mean, my friend that lived next to me, he had a stripper pole in his apartment. And yeah, things got a little wild. And I just like, I
mean, living. You're just living for the first time.
I mean, and I'm not saying that that's a great thing to do, but it happens. And I think that happens a lot with people that leave. I think they just go a little bit, girls gone wild, men go wild. And yeah, it was crazy times. And I was like, I met my husband and my second husband, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to settle down now.
So, okay, so what was what is your Jehovah's Witness story like timeline?
From 1973 to 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that really also made me leave was, I mean, so when I was 16, My brother had a really good friend, and he was around us all the time. He came over to visit my brother. He spent a month in Hawaii. We had moved to Illinois. He had come over there, and he was like really weird. I mean, he was way older than me. He was about 5 years older than me. So you're talking about a 15-year-old compared to a, you know, 20-year-old. And he was always like, when at one point he was like, came into my room and he was like, "Do you like that guy that you were like talking to?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Well, you shouldn't like that guy." And I'm like, you know, and of course, you know, being the Jehovah's Witness, you're like, you're just liking, you're just looking, you're not even touching, you're not doing nothing. And he was like super jealous. And I thought that was just weird. And come to later on, as I moved back to San Francisco, where he was from, where I'm from, and he went to go to Bethel, and we gave him a big party. You know, my friends and I did a big skit, you know. And that night he calls me and he says, "I just want you to know I'm totally in love with you." And I'm like, "What? You're my brother's best friend. What?" And he's like, "I'm totally in love with you." And so we kind of started dating, and he was in Bethel, and then he got kicked out of Bethel. And for what, I don't know, but he got kicked out. And then we started dating, and I'm still at this point, I'm 17. And his dad's a presiding overseer. My mom and dad left for the weekend to do something with my dad's job. And I had a little party. And even though there was like somebody that was older than me watching, well, this boyfriend brought alcohol. And I drank alcohol. And it was like, I don't never drink alcohol at that time. But so this was super new to me. And he raped me. And when I went in for the, you know, and we were supposed to be engaged after that, and I couldn't marry him. I was just like so disgusted. And so one night, you know, somebody was like, one of his friends was like, "Why are you treating him so bad?" And I'm like, "He raped me." And they're like, "What?" I'm like, "He raped me. I was, remember that party? I was under the influence and he raped me." And they're like, "Well, you have to go tell an elder. I'll pick you up. We'll go right now." I said, "Okay." We told an elder. Of course, we had an elders meeting, and I didn't want my mom to be there, but they're like, "You're underage. You have to have your mom be there." So we had three elders. This was like a super, super conservative congregation, to the point where I didn't even have a graduation party because it was like too many people. And they were like, "Well, you know," and they asked all these pervy questions and stuff. And so they wanted to disfellowship me. And
why you?
Because I should have known better. I drank. So, and at that time, I accepted it. I was like, "Yeah, I drank. I'm horrible for that. I put myself, I'm like Dinah, you know, I put myself in that position." And that's what they said, you know, "You're like Dinah. You put yourself in this position. Therefore, basically."
And he gets nothing.
Well, I got privately reproved. He got publicly reproved, but everybody knew. Somehow everybody knew. And I accepted that, which was weird, but I didn't know. And my dad, who was not a Jehovah's Witness, was like telling my mom, "I'm charging him with, you know," and at that time in California, Jehovah's Witnesses elders are mandatory reporters, which people forget that. They are mandatory reporters. You have to report something. They don't. And my dad was like, "I want to charge him for rape." And my mom was like, "Please, please, please." Even the elders were begging my mom, "Can you please talk to Jim and tell him not to press charges?" Because my dad was like, "He's going to jail. This was an underage minor. He's, you know, at that time, 22. He needs to go. He needs to be pressed." No. And my mom begged my dad. please, please, please reproach on Jehovah, blah, blah, blah. And the elders were like, okay. And so my dad never did anything. And I was like, okay. And I remember coming over and picking something up. And my dad was like, I could have had your ass in jail, and blah, blah, blah. And Kurt was like, fuck you. And I'm like, are you? Yeah. So that was the attitude of this elder son. And yeah, it was. And so later on.
Now we see why he got kicked out of, what's that place called? Bethel.
What's that?
Oh, now yeah. We see why he got kicked out of
Bethel. Exactly. Exactly. Well, and you know, dummy me, just being the person, the good Jehovah's Witness girl, I took all that blame on me, that it was my fault. I shouldn't have been drinking. And it really wasn't until I left and met my husband, my current husband, where my husband was, you know, I was telling him the story. He was like, what the fuck? That's not your fault.
Yeah, why you didn't know. Your fault? You doing what you're told, as I was as well. In hindsight, we're like, oh my God, how could we have thought that way? But we're brainwashed.
Right. I mean, so right now, I mean, in today's standards, if somebody drunk, you don't rape them. You know, even worldly people know that. And so that's what my husband was like. You do realize that they were like condoning him. Like they were like saying, oh, well, you know, she was kind of drunk, so I'll give you a pass. And that's so fucked up, because it doesn't matter if a woman, how she dresses or if she's passed out, that doesn't give the right for a man to rape her. And that's basically what they were saying. And that's kind of the moment where my brain went switched and was like, that is really crazy thinking. And he's an elder now in Southern California, and I would love to be able to, you know. And the thing is like I told my family how I felt, and they believe me. They're like, yeah, you should report it. And my mom had some sort of crisis in her conscience that what she did was pretty shitty, but they're like, now their whole story is, oh, we report it. We report it. And no, you don't. And I'm like, you can believe my story, but you're not going to believe all these other stories of people getting raped and molested. And, you know, they're serving in, they can go door to door and be a molester or a child rapist. So that kind of, that's when my whole mind kind of did a switch. And I realized that this is super cult thinking, where you can, you know, when I started finding out about the sexual abuse, that I didn't realize it was, you know, you just kind of live in your own microcosm and thinking that this only happened to you. And then you start reading stories of people where women have been raped or boys have been raped by elders and stuff. It all can't be lies. And it all, you know, and when they're telling you can't read anything else, or they're telling you you can't investigate anything else, then to me, that's when my brain switched and said, enough is enough.
And where would you learn those terms anyway? Like, I didn't know what sex was until I was like 20.
Yeah.
Or even masturbation. I didn't know those things until I was like 20 or 21, because a girl at work taught me those things. And so you wouldn't know these things anyway, because as Jehovah's Witness, It's like hush hush. They don't even teach you what your pee-pee is called, what your private parts are called.
Right.
So it's like, how would you know if what even raped was? So it's like, if it happened, right. Of course it happens, because that's how you know. Someone violated you.
So did your mom never, like, so were your parents raised in this? How did you become a Jehovah's Witness?
I was born in it. I was born 83, and then I left, I think, 2002. Yeah, 2002 or 2003. One of them.
Is your mom and your family still in the religion?
I think they are. And I feel that, well, I have a theory about mental illness. I feel like there's mental illness where somehow you're born with a malfunction or something happened to you while you're a child, or somebody or something like a religion will create mental illness within you, like trauma, which will create mental illness. And I've noticed a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses, even in the religion, I cannot help calling them mentally ill, because it's like, in being ill, you can be, you can heal. You can be un-ill too. Right. Because I noticed, like, my parents, I was like, they've done, especially my mother, she's very violent physically and verbally. She would say the nastiest things that I've ever heard as a kid. Even I don't hear worldly people saying those things.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you a Jehovah's Witness? And mm-hmm. how are you a people of love?
Oh, they beat their kids. So I was 5 when my mom became a Jehovah's Witness, and she was so proud that to make, you know, here I am 5 years old. She's got a 5, so I'm 5. She's got an 8-year-old, 11-year-old, 13-year-old, and here I am 5, expected to. And at that time, it was Sunday, 2 hours, Tuesday, book study, Thursday, 2 hours, you know, yep. And then Fields Earth. So her only way to control a 5-year-old who's never been to church, who's never done anything, was to get a switch. And she would have me pick up a switch until her dying day. One of her most proudest moments is beating me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she would tell, I grew up with her telling, oh, I got Kelly a switch, and the minute I switched her, she was perfectly fine at meetings. I'm mm-hmm. like, yeah, well, fuck yeah. Who wants to be beat with a switch? And I've never seen a religion where, I mean, I've been to churches and stuff too, and I've never seen their kids being beaten as I have seen Jehovah's Witnesses kids being beaten. Like, yeah, my friend's little boy was like, one time she was taking him out and somebody was like, this is going to make me cry. He was holding on to the wall and he was like, can somebody please help me? Because he knew he was going to get the shit beat out of him for not sitting still. And then I have and then my youngest is an autistic child. We didn't know what was going on with him. And people were like, you need to take him out. You need to, you know. And I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with this baby. He is, you know, they were like wanting me to spank a baby. And I'm like, no, I am not doing this. And as he got older, like when he was like 2, we knew that something was not right with him. I thought he had like Tourette's syndrome. And people were like, they made us go out to the back, you know, the back yeah. part. And then I met up with a friend whose daughter was lost part of her cerebral part of her brain. And they were still like, you need to discipline her. And she was always shunned, and she finally left. Oh my God, she left too. And me and her reconnected not too long ago, but she was missing part of her brain. And these motherfuckers were telling her to go to the back. They didn't want to hear her. And there was a certain, there was a couple people that she did not like the way they spoke, like a couple elders. And she would be like, ah, you know, she just like start screaming. And they were like, get her out. You need to take her to the back. You need to be, you know, out in the outcast part, you know? And that's the way, you know, and that was another thing. I'm like, how are you? I mean, even worldly people have better compassion for their kids.
Yeah. Actually, worldly people have everything that Jehovah's Witnesses claim that they do, but they do not. Because when I hung out with worldly people, I've experienced empathy, compassion, love, respect, politeness, generosity. Yeah, they're genuine people. But Jehovah's Witnesses, if you don't go with their plan, it's their way or the highway. And this is why it's a brainwashing mental illness, because as you and I, when we're in it, we see so much shit, but then because the way we're programmed, we have to say it's okay. It's Jehovah's way.
Yeah.
It's Jehovah's way. Don't question it. Don't question it. Don't question it until eventually
the
last straw that brings the camel's back in, and you go, okay, I gotta go. Is that working? Yeah. I've seen a lot of the groups where people fight about, like some Jehovah's Witnesses group, there's a lot of apostates on there, and they have people are fighting like, this is happening, this is not happening, and Jehovah's Witnesses are fighting, and the apostates are fighting. And then I was just like, you know what? I don't say anything in those groups. But I was thinking, I was just like, if you're an apostate, you're wasting your breath, because when you were there, you were like them, and you know how strong-headed you were. Okay. So why are you wasting your time trying to argue with someone who was as strong-headed as you were? So just, they will find their way eventually.
Yeah, you hit that on the mark. It will only take something. It will only take an event. It will only take a moment. Words aren't going to help. Words are going to do this. It's going to be like, all of a sudden, it's just going to be like it was for me, most likely for you, where something just turned. And, you know, and it was kind of a slow turn for me, you know, like little click. And then all of a sudden it was just like, holy hell.
Yeah.
And you know where my moment went with that? Where it went like full blown, like, fuck this. I went back. Like, I missed my mom. I missed my family. And I was out for a couple years, and I was having like super anxiety. And I left my husband that I'm married to. We got married twice, but another story. But I left. My mom said, do you want to move in with me? She told the elders that I have mental illness. Shocker. And they allowed her to have me live with her. But I mean, we lived in the same house, but it was like completely separate. I mean, like, she did her thing, I did my thing. I went to work. I obviously was trying to get back into the religion. I had no friends. I did nothing. And I got reinstated. And then me and her moved to Washington, and we were at a convention, and I was just still like, I'd go to meetings and I'm just like, okay. And I was falling asleep all the time because I was like, I can't deal with this. I was like taking my mental, and then, you know, and we went to a convention, and it was the convention where, well, there was a watchtower before that. It was about how a kid had shunned his mom, and everybody was praising him for shunning his mom and saying, you know, what a great thing. And then she was like, oh, I'm so glad my son did this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit. She probably just came back because she missed her son. but whatever. And then that summer, there was that drama. The drama where the girl left and she was calling her mom and she just wanted to hear her mom and she shut it down. And the dad was like, nope, don't call. And I always thought, like, well, what if she was on the brink of suicide? As a suicide survivor, I'm like, that hit me hard. I'm like, what if she was reaching out? What? Because I didn't have that. I couldn't reach out when I tried to kill myself. And that fucking drama where the mom just left her daughter out in the rain and they're trying to tell people to shun your children that you gave birth to. Like, you pushed out a child. You had a child. And they're telling you not to talk to them. And that you need to shun them. The drama happened. Intermission. I said, Mom, I'm going to go do some cleaning. I walked over across the bar, had a drink, and came back. And we went home and I left. That was it. That was my moment. Because I'm like, fuck you for telling me that I have to. I mean, I miss my mom, but there's no way that someone's going to tell me to shun my child. If that girl could have been trying to reach out to not kill herself. And there's so much a fucking suicide rate in this fucking religion. You know? And that was it. I went home. I told my mom, I'm done. Disfellowship me. I don't care. And they were like, well, you can't leave. I'm like, oh, I am leaving. You watch me. Because you guys are a fucking cult. You guys are shunning. You're saying to kids to shun their parents. You're telling a parent to shun their child. And fuck that. Mm-hmm. And that I've never looked back again. And that's when my whole world changed. When I was like, this is fucking stupid. And you know what? My anxiety, I was having anxiety attacks like super bad. I couldn't even keep a job because I was having anxiety attacks because I was trying to get back into the religion. After that, I was good.
Hmm. No. I'm curious about something. Do you think that Jehovah's Witnesses, first of all, do you think they have self-love in, or do you think they love at all? Because I'm just like confused. Because, okay, so I understand we're taught to love, put God first. And then your children means nothing to you. Okay, so if you love God first, and then your children did something, and then you have to shun them per the rule, you shun them. Do you feel bad, but you still love Jehovah? Or did your kid didn't matter to you, and you like, they were a piece of garbage anyway, and then you love Jehovah, and that's all? Like, have you?
I chose my kids.
Yeah, I know, not you, but like,
Oh, my mom chooses Jehovah.
So it's like, so you mean she nothing?
She has literally told me, I will choose Jehovah before you.
So basically, they don't love anyone, not even their brothers and sisters. They don't love people in the congregation at all because that person could stray away as well. So they just love Jehovah, period.
Yep. No, my mom has flat out told me, I haven't seen my mom in 6 years. She texted me a couple times. She was dying. She had a major open heart surgery and I wanted to see her and she refused to see me. So yes, they choose Jehovah before their own children. She pushed me out of her own body And that's not just me. That's many stories.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, and my mom broke her hip about a year ago, and my brother moved closer to her, and I went over there and I brought soup over to her. And my brother, I would recognize my brother no matter what. I mean, I get it. I had a mask on, but I would know my brother's voice flat out. I would know my brother's voice. My brother opened the door. I had my mask on. I gave him the soup, and he was like, "And who are you?" I took my mask off and I'm like, "Your fucking sister." He's like, "Oh, okay." I'm like, "So I'm not," I said, "can I see mom?" He's like, "Nope." Okay, fine. If I get invited to her funeral, I guess I'm, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she literally told me that she chooses, because I asked my sister, which I guess my sister, I don't know what my sister's doing. She must feel guilty. But I asked my sister, "Can I see mom?" I live 2 hours from my mom. I'm in Oregon. Idaho is 2 hours away. I go to Idaho all the time. And because we have no Walmart, we have no Costco. I'm in the middle of nowhere. So I go to Idaho to do shopping and stuff. And I'm like, I told my sister, I said, "Can I go see mom? Can you text mom? Can I see her?" No. And my mom texted me, "I know you want to see me, but I choose Jehovah." So that's, you know, that's a trauma that we face, you know, as kids of Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, we face that. And there actually is, talking to my therapist, she gave me literature. There is actually PTSD called religious trauma. It's a real thing. And I think that's what happens with a lot of us, you know, and that's why there's such a high suicide rate,
mm-hmm,
or attempted suicide, you know. It's so just, you know, I've lost a lot of friends.
Oh, you lost a lot of friends who are Jehovah's Witness with suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And myself, I almost lost myself. I mean, by the grace of whatever, I had a friend that I almost off. I was in a coma for 3 days for an overdose because I just could not keep up. I could not handle the, I guess, the trauma of having a religion that's so overpressing. And I mean, I lived, and I'm like super, and you know, wasn't by anybody Jehovah's Witness. It was a friend that found me, and I lived, and I'm happy that I lived. But at the same time, at that moment, I just was like, I'm done. My mom won't see me. My sister won't see me. My brothers won't see me. I'm going to die in Armageddon. And that's what happens with, that's what happens, you know, and that's what, you know, I mean, I lived, and the thing is that's what is called religious trauma. You see it in Amish people, you see it in Mormon people, you know, it's not, we're not inclusive, you know, but there is actually, I learned within this last year that I didn't know what to call it. I just was like, okay, I'd go to therapy, and I'm like, okay, I was a Jehovah's Witness. And then someone, like my therapist, was like, "Do you know that there's actually a thing called religious trauma? And it's not just religious, it's cult trauma." I mean, I'm sure Catholics and Protestants and that have, you know, guilt and whatever, but I don't think it's like anything like, you know, I mean, you know, people are like, oh, Jehovah's Witnesses are cult. Yeah, they are. And I used to think I would die on that mountain, that they weren't a cult. But the more, you know, the last few years, I'm like, yeah, they are. And I think Mormon, you know, some Mormon sects are the same kind of thing. You know, not all Mormons, but I mean, I think there's some sort of, you know, when you leave, there's something there too. And Amish and, you know, Mennonites and that kind of thing, where it's like super conservatory and, you know, they're just all in your business every minute of the day. Like you have to, you know, Catholics are not planning out your day. You know what I mean? Like if you fuck a Catholic has weird sex, nobody's coming after them. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or, I mean, you know, if you have a weird thought, nobody's coming after you in a Catholic or whatever religion, but they're coming after you. And I think it's the whole, you know, and, you know, most people just go to church on Sunday, right? Where other, like with Jehovah's Witnesses, like what, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, or whatever day, you know, I mean, it's like every, you know, their time, you are on a schedule with them.
And then my mom was preaching too.
Yeah. And apparently letter writing now. So my mom would be, she was so obsessive about studying. Like it took her 2 hours to study the Watchtower. And she'd have all these notes. And I'm just like, the hell? I mean, and it's just like, it's so consuming. It's her whole life. That's all she has. And, you know, so I guess that's why she won't see me, because, yeah, she's dedicated, basically sacrificed her life to Jehovah.
And some people, I think that's where, at this point, they're so old. Like my parents, I'm guessing, they're not the kindest people, but they're so old and that's all they know. If they leave,
yeah,
they might die of shock. Like literally, they'll die. So they might as well stay there and live a false life. That's my big guess. Because with the life they're leaving with double, what's that thing called? Double face. There's no way you actually believe in Jehovah. You know, right, like,
but at that point, that's not the target audience that we're trying to get to, right? Because, you know, the old people are not leaving Jehovah. They've already sacrificed their kids and shunned their kids. And you know what I mean? It's the younger people that are like coming in and, you know,
mm-hmm.
people that have a girlfriend or a boyfriend and, or like they're starting to study and you're like, run. You know, run. You know, that's your target already, you know, people. It's not the old people. Your mom, my mom, they're never going to leave Jehovah. They're going to die on that mountain.
Yeah. And that's fine with me. Funny thing is, my landlord was shocked to know about Jehovah's Witness. And he's like, how does your mother want to speak to you? And he thinks he would. He's old too. It's like, I wanted to say old with their judgments. He's like, so he's old. So he's like judging me, thinking because I'm young, I'm the one who don't want to talk to my parents. He's like, why don't you go visit them? Why don't you even text? Why don't you call? And then when I told him, I was just like, they shun me. They're Jehovah's Witness. He does not understand that. It's like he's part of the world and I get it. It's like a different language someone is speaking. He's like, what do you mean? Did you kill somebody? Yes. Did you steal money? Like Did you go to jail? Did you rape somebody? Like, how could someone shun you? No, just because I don't want to be part of religion. I don't understand that. Did you kill somebody?
Right? I mean, like, I post stuff on my page, my Facebook page, all the time. And I'm always like, okay, I'm not trying to be drama. I'm not. But I have to speak how I feel, right? And I'm like, you know, like, and my worldly family, my cousins and stuff are like, what the hell? I mean, they know my mom and stuff, but it's exactly what you said. They like, what did you do? Or yeah. Other friends that don't understand. I'm like, I didn't do anything. You.
And they don't believe you either.
I just left their fucking religion. I didn't do anything. And they're like, they don't understand. Their mind is blown, you know? And they're like, wait. Wait a minute. You just walked away from your religion? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, and your mom won't see you. Yes. You haven't seen your mom in like 6 years? Yeah. And they're like, all because you left a faith that you didn't believe in. I said, yes. And they're just like, they just don't understand, because they think, people think that Jehovah's Witnesses are just these, like, you know, sweet little people coming to the door, preaching their Bible, blah, blah, blah. Nothing harmless. They're good people. And, you know, and for the most part, yeah, they are. I'd hire them to clean my house or whatever, you know. But they're all just thinking, they're sweet people.
Yep.
Yes. There is a deep, 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 something deep that they can't. I mean, I get it. They don't. Oh my God. And sometimes when I talk to people, like, they'll say, you know, something, you know, when my mom was going through her health thing, I was like work and I was super sad. And they're like, why are you sad? And I'm like, oh, my mom is this. And I'm like, well, just go see her. And I'm like, if it was that easy to go see her. And they're like, wait, I always thought Jehovah's Witnesses were. And I'm like, no. There's a deep darkness in that. And they, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, what did you do? Nothing. I just walked away from religion. Haven't you, you know, I mean, that's just like changing your mind about something that everybody else thinks is no big deal. Like, you know, like one time a Catholic became Catholic and was like, I don't want to be Catholic anymore. They went somewhere else. Nobody cares.
Yeah, no big deal. I mean,
nobody's like going, what did you do? You know, and, you know, that doesn't happen in religion. And for the most part, I mean, like, if I, you know, I once in a while go to a church here in town that's like, you know, non-denominational, you know, no big deal. If I haven't been there for a while, no one's calling me up and going, where the fuck are you? I haven't seen you. You know, nobody's doing that. And that's what they do in this religion, you know? And yeah, it's mind-blowing because, you know, my family that are non-Jehovah's Witnesses, they always knew my mom was a Jehovah's Witness. They've grown up with us being Jehovah's Witnesses. But they did not realize until I left, because none of my siblings have left except for me. They had no idea, no clue, to the point of shunning. My cousin is just like, I have a couple cousins and they're just like, I don't remember your mom being like this.
Do they talk to them?
Huh?
Do the Jehovah's Witness family talk to the worldly family?
Yes, they do. And my sister is friends with my cousin. My sister comes to Washington, and my cousin lives in Washington. And every so often, they, you know, they get together and they're friends. But they had no idea until I left that this is.
years ago. And she invited, of course, everybody. And she wanted my mom to come, her aunt. And she wanted my sister to come, her cousin. And my sister told me that mom wanted to see everybody in the family. Could I not come? Because I was a fellowship. And I told my cousin, I said, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it, even though I helped her plan it and stuff. And I said, I'm not going to be able to come because my mom wants to come. And my cousin was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I'm like, no, this is what happens. And she's like, no, hell no. You come. They can stay. That's not what this is about. This is about if you can't get along with family. I mean, this isn't a park. If you want to be on one side, you can be on one side. She's like, but that's not what I want. I wanted family to be together. And I'm like, well, I'm just telling you, this is the reality. And she's like, she texted my sister and said, you know what? If you can't deal with Kelly being there, just don't come. And my sister's like, I guess we're not coming. And I'm like, that's your choice. It's not my choice. Mm-hmm. You know, that's on you, not on me. And she's like, well, mom was just really hoping to look forward to seeing people. I'm like, well, she can come. I'm fine. I can stay my ass over or whatever. She's like, well, it might look awkward. I'm like, well, that's on you, not on me. And so my cousin was just like, she was floored. She knew that my mom was a Jehovah's Witness, and she's grown up with us being Jehovah's Witnesses and stuff. But she had no idea. They don't until someone decides to leave, right? Like your situation. You left and people were like, what'd you do? What'd you do?
Yeah.
Nothing. And I walked away.
Yeah. So you see.
I was done.
Go ahead.
You were done being controlled.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
So you mentioned that you are seeing a counselor. Is this specifically for religious trauma?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And how are you overcoming that?
What's that?
How are you overcoming that? Like, do they have like a thing for you to follow, or how's that going?
It's going really good. The thing is they realize that they actually have been, the thing is, the thing that's great about them is the counselor that I'm seeing, she was not a Jehovah's Witness, but her partner was a Jehovah's Witness. Oh. So the lingo, I can say something to her and she understands what the lingo means, because, you know, when I say paradise or 144,000 or governing body, she knows what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. If you can find somebody that, and you know, somebody, it doesn't have to, I mean, I got lucky in that way, but I think if there's other counselors that have done their research about, you know, either Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Amish, Mennonites, mm-hmm. if they've done their research and they know the lingo, because that's the hardest thing, right? How do you, you know, have you been with somebody and you try to explain how it works, you know, the 144,000, how paradise works? I mean, have you ever had that conversation with somebody?
Not really. A lot of people get bored and I don't really talk about it. I talk about it, but it's never to extent to like explaining so much where people like, ooh, I want to know more. Because a lot of people that I interact with, they're not religious, and the ones who are, they just get upset about it. They say that's not loving, and they just don't want to hear more.
Right.
even a Catholic would say it's not loving.
Well, like, you know, I had to explain to my mother-in-law, you know, and my husband that I'm married to now. And my mother-in-law is like, I call her my mother-in-law. She's like super sweet. She wouldn't say shit if she had shit in her mouth. You know, she's just like this really sweet person. And she was asking me, like, you know, questions. And when I started explaining it to her, and I, you know, same with my husband, I would start to explain stuff to her, you know, about, you know, paradise. And then the thing that always fucks me up is like, so my mom has been so loyal. Your parents probably the same way. They get resurrected or they make it into the new system. And then 1,000 years comes by, and then Satan, I mean, this is, you know, you're explaining that, like, well, then Satan comes out, and then my husband or my mother-in-law is like, well, shouldn't it have been destroyed at Armageddon? Like, why is he testing you guys all again? You know? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, you know, like,
I just work here. I don't know.
Exactly. And, you know, and you just, like, you know, as a Jehovah's Witness, you know, you just kind of like take it all and like, okay. And I mean, even my sister, when I was leaving, I'm like, okay, what the fuck was up with Lot? Like, he could have his daughters can get him drunk and they rape him? Like, what the fuck? And my sister's like, oh, he's just, you know, you never know. Just, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. And why can David be this horrible person? He murdered, he slaughtered, he adultery, and one person fucks up and they're dead, you know? And Job, God and Satan are making bets now? Like, what the fuck? And so when I explain some of this stuff to people
that bros making bets,
I'm like, when I'm like explaining to my mother-in-law, I'll like all of a sudden, you know, when I first started explaining to her like what we believed or what I believed at the time, my brain all of a sudden just would like, I don't even know, what the fuck? You know? And she's like, where is that in the Bible? I don't know. It's just what I believed. And that's what, you know, and that's like you said, you know, these people are just like, they're just so entrenched. It's not the older people that are, we're never going to get to my mom. My mom is never going to not be a Jehovah's Witness.
Mm-hmm. And even if they know, I feel that it would be a suicide for the mentally, like, it's too late. Just live your life, die in it, act like you know, like, what they call physically and mentally out. That's fine.
Well, you have to have, you have to have radical acceptance. I mean, radical acceptance to where your brain just, like, went, what? You know? And you're like, that's radical acceptance. And not everybody can have that. And, you know, I was, you know, I don't know, it took me, I don't know, maybe it took me dying almost, you know? It took that drama that where I was in that position, I tried to kill myself and I lived through it. And then to see a drama where a mom is like literally shutting her phone off because she can't answer her daughter's phone call. And, you know, at that drama didn't show that girl was just crying. She just either feeling guilt or she wanted to come back. It didn't say. All she was doing was reaching out to her parents. And that could have been, to me, that could have been her trying to reach out. And then the next day she's dead because nobody, her parents didn't reach out to her. And to me, that was radical acceptance where I'm like, I'm done with this. And literally got home from the convention and I left. Told my mom, I'm done. And I moved back and I met back up with my husband that I married now. My third husband. We got remarried. I called him up. I said, take me home. And he came up and
I've been here